another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, where history proves that truth, or at least their version of it, is truly stranger than fiction. It's good to be back. I've been fighting the flu, and my household has gotten the flu, and I'm just now getting my voice back. I've recorded one podcast before this, but we are recovering, and if my voice gives out in the middle of this, you'll know why it has given out. But I wanted to, even before I got sick, I wanted to conquer this. I have been asked for, I can't tell you how many years, almost a decade now, to talk about Freemasonry. First, I was asked to talk about Freemasonry as it was related to William Branham and the Message Cult, because there are deep connections to Freemasonry there. But more recently, as I started to realize that the foundation that William Branham laid and many people built upon, and many strong connections and ties to Branhamism through those different various groups and organizations and ministers and leaders and evangelists, etc., apostles in the NAR, there are some of them that either are in Freemasonry, look like they're Freemasons, act like Freemasons, and there's the phrase, if it acts like a duck, walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it's probably a duck. But I'm going to try to conquer this one in a very delicate way. I've actually avoided this topic forever. And the reason I avoided it is because of my own journey out of the Branham cult. Whenever I was in the Branham cult, and when I finally escaped, I started deprogramming and began to understand that there were so many things that were hidden from me and just didn't make sense. And you know, one or two things, it's not a big deal. You think, well, there was just an error, they went off into error, and therefore the error exists. But when it's a whole platform of errors and lies, and you recognize that you have been lied to for decades, there, and every person who has experienced this, there's this thing that happens mentally. You begin to think, well, there must have been a strategy behind the lies. Why were so many lies? They must have had an agenda. What was the agenda? Now, with Branhamism, I have fully exposed and conquered what was the agenda. So I can clearly say, yes, there was an underlying agenda. But in my research, I haven't really found a way to say that Freemasonry was behind that agenda, although there are many conspiracy theorists out there would argue, well, that agenda existed because of Freemasonry. And there's a reason for this, which I'll get into. At the same time, whenever you go through this and you begin to realize that you've been lied to and there must have been an agenda, what was the agenda? You start looking at other groups to try to determine, well, what is the broad scope of agenda? Was this one cog in a much larger wheel? And no matter who you are, no matter what group you're in, when you go down that path, you are going to land at Freemasonry. I don't care what group you're in. It's just something that happens. You're going to go to Freemasonry. And the first thing that happens when you do, you start searching the web, you start reading some books here and there, and you start to see that there's this massive conspiracy, and there are many conspiracy theorists that are claiming that there is this evil agenda by the Freemasons, and they're going to try to conquer the world. And I was of that mindset. I really was. And it took me years to study Freemasonry, to understand what it means, what it is, how to even describe it, because that part is actually quite difficult. And in the end, for those who are curious where I'm going to end up at this, in the end, I am not a fan of Freemasonry. So don't think that I'm defending it. I'm just going to give you the real history, and people can understand where I was coming from when I was of that mindset. So this podcast is actually going to conquer many different aspects of this subject of Freemasonry. The first one is I'm going to try to demystify it just a bit, because when I was in that conspiracy theory mindset, it's very damaging to your mental health. And no matter who you are, if you get focused on this and obsessing on this, you're going to spiral out of control. I did. And you're going to say things that aren't quite true and believe things that aren't quite true because, quite frankly, when you search it on the web, you're going to read things that aren't quite true. And I'll never forget the shock when I learned that I had been lied to for decades. I left and I thought there was this big conspiracy by the Freemasons, and then I started studying it and reading all of these different people who, some of them are religious leaders, respected religious leaders, who are spreading propaganda. And I realized after, it took me years, I don't know what it was, 5 to 7 years, I realized that I had been lied to again. And I'm going to be really honest, that hurts. Whenever you've been lied to for your entire life, and then you start to try to detangle that, and you find respectable people who are lying to you again, that angers me. And so I'm going to try to be open and honest in this podcast, and I'm probably going to step on a few toes. That's what I do in my podcast anyway, but I'm going to try to demystify it just a bit. So this podcast will target people who are going through that and all of the mental anguish that comes with conspiracy theories. There's a whole another group of people who are very religious, and they see that the potential for this to be an order of Satan and Satan's army and creating a new world order. There's so many different avenues that that line of thinking takes, and they don't really dive too deep into the conspiracy theories. What they instead look at is the potential for an agenda. Maybe not the agenda, but the potential for an agenda. And I want to target that just a bit because that one's kind of funny to me. People who are studying Freemasonry and they're seeing all of this for the first time after they're leaving a cult, they think, well, oh my gosh, this must be a conspiracy theory. If you've been trained and manipulated by any of the descendants of Branhamism, you think it's, and I thought it too, you think this is an agenda by the Catholic Church to dominate the world and overthrow the Protestants. That, I'm sad to say, that's one of the thoughts that goes through your head. The irony is, if you study Catholicism and study Freemasonry, the union of the intersection of those two, you find that the Catholics are actually strongly against Freemasonry. And I started to begin to understand that there are many authoritarian structures in religion that are against Freemasonry, because Freemasonry is a group of people that can help shape the ideas and the ideologies of its members without the control of the church. In other words, if you're in a fivefold ministry and you've got a fivefold pastor who's wanting to create an authoritarian structure and fully control, dominate, shepherd you, well, this is something they can't control. And so you're being influenced by another group. The interesting part of this is if you live normal life, you're going to be influenced by many different groups, not just the Masons. But the Masons is something that they can't understand. And so because they can't understand it, they're going to be against it. And you'll find people who are in leadership in recognized, respectable ministries who fight against Freemasonry. I've read through some of their articles, and they're spreading propaganda, which is, for me, it's a little bit offensive. But more to the point, they're showing signs of the bite model, of Stephen Hassan's bite model of authoritarian control. They do not want you to go there because they can't control you if you're being influenced by it. So I'm going to target that group as well. There's this whole nother group that's on the outside of this, some of them religious, some of them not, looking at people who escape these religions and these cultish groups, and they suddenly turn hardcore conspiracy theorists against the Freemasons, and they're wondering, well, why is this? People know Freemasons, and they know that they're just average normal people in most cases. Not all, but in most cases. And so I'm going to try to target that group as well. And the best way that I know to do it is to use an example, and I'm going to build upon this example in this podcast, but I'm going to use the example of the Little Rascals show. If you haven't seen the Little Rascals and you have been influenced by these cults and are believing the propaganda that exists about Freemasons, highly recommend that you pause right now, go to YouTube, go wherever you can find it, watch some Little Rascal shows. Because as I use this as my example, if you've seen the show, it's going to make a whole lot of sense. If you haven't, I'll just briefly explain it. Little Rascals is this show with these kids who were, usually it's a black and white show if I remember correctly, but these kids who are doing all kinds of funny things. It's a comedy show for kids and adults. A lot of what they do is adult humor, however, and they have this club that they call the He-Man Woman Haters Club. And there are many episodes that show the intricate details of how that club is in many ways kind of silly. But if you're watching it as an adult, you recognize that, wait, some of the things that these kids are doing, I am watching adults do the same thing. So it's the perfect example for this. And I used it in a podcast recently with Chino Ross. I mentioned, and that's actually why I wanted to record this podcast. Somehow, Chino and I got on the topic of Freemasonry, and I mentioned that whenever I began my business, I accidentally found myself in a Masonic lodge or temple or something like this. I was, at that point in time, I was transitioning my business from focusing on the medical industry to manufacturing and small business. And I was taking business leaders out to lunch, and one of them said, come meet me at this place. We'll have a good lunch. And it was a great lunch. It was one of the better lunches I've had, actually. But I'm sitting there eating, and you know, I never really even paused to look at the walls around me because I was so intent on gaining his business that it wasn't until the middle of our meal, I suddenly look around and I'm like, wait a minute. These signs, these symbols, I know what this is, because I was in that conspiracy theory mindset. This was a Masonic place, right? And so I asked him, he said, yeah, I'm a member, I'm a Mason. And at that point in time, I had just deprogrammed the message. I had just became a conspiracy theorist against Freemasonry. And I come unglued, man. Shockingly, he became my client, but I really had my sincere doubts of whether or not this relationship was going to work out. Can I trust this man? That's one of the things you go through. Can you trust this man? So let's break it down a little bit. Freemasonry, again, go back to the He-Man Woman Haters Club. And let me pause right there for you New Age people who are offended by that, because it is offensive in the politically correct language of today. He-Man Woman Haters Club was kind of a joke in the show. That's what they called it. They wanted to keep the girls out because they were young boys of the age where girls are icky. And there's a funny theme if you watch that show. There comes a point in time in which Spanky, who's one of the, or it's Alfalfa, one of the members of this club, suddenly falls in love with Darla, and now you have this conundrum. We're told we need to keep Darla out because it's a He-Man Woman Haters Club, but eventually they let Darla in some episodes. It's kind of funny. It's not as offensive as you can take it. Watch the show. If you haven't seen it, watch the show. But anyway, using that as an example, you have many different groups who are joining these Masonic lodges across the world, and many of them don't even know their history of what is the lodge. And so a good part of your membership, as I understand, I've never been a member, but in talking with people and reading, researching, etc., one of the aspects of this is they pay tribute to their histories. And so when you become a member, you'll go through the ceremonies, the rituals, et cetera, and you will learn the history of whatever is the group or lodge that you're a part of. And you find out that there were many, many people in world history, both good and bad, that were members of the different Masonic orders. Lots of them. And everybody from George Washington and Ben Franklin to Winston Churchill, Theodore Roosevelt, you can go down right down the line. Buzz Aldrin, who is famous in the world of space, he was a member. J. Edgar Hoover, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, John Wayne, Duke Ellington. You can go right down the line, and you can find both good guys and bad guys as you think of world history. Napoleon was a Freemason, and if I remember the history correctly, Napoleon had his brother as head of some order. And that relates to this story, interestingly. So you've got all of these good and bad people. Davy Crockett. When you watch Davy Crockett and you see the king of the wild frontier, you never really stop to think, well, wait, he was a Mason. Is Masons bad? Is he bad? Was there an agenda? So whenever I began to realize that there are both good and bad people, some of them high ranking, some of them not, the question still remained in my head, is there an agenda? And to be honest, until you come across different propaganda machines, one of the biggest ones is the anti-Semitic protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which talks about this world plot for the Jews to take over the world. And it developed into Christian Identity, which strongly influenced William Branham's message. Leaders in the post-World War II healing revival were deeply embedded in Christian Identity. Gordon Lindsay, who founded Christ for the Nations, was in Christian Identity conferences, keynote speaker in those conferences. When you begin to understand that things like that exist, this is just one of many different conspiracy theories. And it all comes down to this central point, which I'm going to focus on, and that is that when you are in such a group and you escape, the biggest thing that hits you is the cult that I was in was covering things up. They were lying to me, but more to the point, they weren't transparent. You can't lie to somebody if you're being transparent. If you suddenly realize that something you're saying is incorrect or false, or some leader has completely lied about their spiritual experiences, if a group were transparent, whenever a leader in that group realizes that there was a lie told, they would openly say, yes, William Branham lied about this, that, or the other, but we still respect him as our spiritual leader. That's how transparency works. Instead, what you find is non-transparent. No, he never lied, and I'm going to fully ignore any details that prove otherwise. That's how these groups grow. When the Masonic orders, because it is a fraternal order, and they're to learn its inner secrets, you must become a member, you must go through the steps and rituals, etc. It's not seen to those outside as a transparent group. So that is one of the problems that develops into all of these conspiracy theories. The other thing I'm going to address in this podcast is Rick Joyner and the Knights of Malta. I've been asked by multiple people through email, some phone calls, believe it or not, in messages on the comment feeds, please talk about Rick Joyner and his joining the Freemasons. He was a member of the Knights of Malta. One person emailed me photographs of Rick Joyner standing with proudly displaying the Knights of Malta symbolism, etc., and openly declaring he is a member of the Knights of Malta. And all of the people who were like me, who were conspiracy theorists against Freemasonry, suddenly were thinking, oh my gosh, he is a Freemason, this whole thing. Now I understand why he created this destructive cult. So one of the things that happens when you're in that conspiracy theory mindset, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, you start to see any other type of animal that looks like a duck, you're going to say, well, that must be a Freemason. That was a horrific example, but you start to see similarities between other fraternal groups. That's a better way to say it. And whenever you see that there is a fraternal order and they have symbols, they have, I don't know, secret handshakes, whatever it is they do, the rituals, you start to brand it as Freemasonry. But the interesting part of this is, and Rick Joyner openly declares this on his website, if you read it, he says the Knights of Malta are not Freemasons. The people who first contacted me about this, they had read through propaganda. They had seen some evidence that they said overturned this. They said Rick Joyner is lying. And what they found is a little bit funny and interesting. There is a hierarchy within Freemasons where there's like a pecking order. You rise from the ranks of the rank and file member up to the 33rd degree or whatever it is. And each one of these ranks has a name. One of the ranks that you can rise up to are the Knights of Malta. And so whenever they saw the rank, they thought, well, that must be the order. And so therefore, Rick Joyner must be a Freemason. Interesting part of this is as I'm going to explain in the latter half of this podcast. Part of what they said was correct, but they got the order incorrect. He was not a Freemason. The Knights of Malta, or the Knights of St. John, were actually a monastic community. I don't know how you say that word. But basically, they ran this hospital for pilgrims in the Holy Land. And so, if you go back into the ancient histories and you start to understand how many of these orders developed, not all of them were created equal, and many of them were created for good purposes. A hospital order in a world where you can't just go to a hospital on a corner, that's actually a really good thing. And if you trace its history, you find that this really good thing got hijacked in about almost 1800, I think it was 1798 or something. Napoleon actually led one of the branches, the French occupation of Malta, and I don't know if that's why or because of its development in Malta, it became known as the Knights of Malta, but it was actually the Knights of St. John. And so if you look at Rick Joyner and you begin to read through the histories of what he's talking about, he's actually talking about something that has a good purpose and intention. And when you read the name Napoleon associated with it, you think, oh my gosh, Napoleon tried to take over the world. Now Rick Joyner is Napoleon, and he's trying to take over the world. So there's these funny mental leaps that you go through. So back to our little rascals example. I'm going to do my best to break this down in a way that people can understand, and knowing that it is difficult if you have been in a cult, because I know exactly the mindset of where you are in your head if you've taken this next step, which is to basically become a conspiracy theorist against Freemasonry. The first thing you think is there must be an overall agenda. There must be something that is happening behind the scenes because Napoleon's in it. Napoleon is using it for evil. And you can read through some history, especially, what's a good example? The American Revolution. So George Washington was in it, and there's a conspiracy theory, maybe he was part of it, he was setting up a secret order in the United States. And then you read that in Great Britain, there was a drive by, I can't remember what Masonic order, but one of the Masonic orders allegedly were trying to undermine the colonies, and they were doing it through some Masonic order. And so you start to make that connection, well, they must be connected to Ben Franklin, and Ben Franklin must be the mastermind, and now we see all of the founding fathers. They were, not all, but many of them were Freemasons, so there's an underlying agenda, and look what it has turned into today. That's how your mind goes through those leaps, because you're framing that thought with today's world. In today's world, we can get on Zoom, I can talk to somebody in Great Britain, and I can plan strategy to conquer the world from Great Britain to United States. Back then, they were sending letters, and it had to go by boat. If you tried to make some change in strategy, it wasn't a quick change at all. You had to send actual generals over to, you know, undermine the colonies, and there would have to have been this much broader, grander scheme. And after the American Revolution, that scheme would most likely have been uncovered. However, to the conspiracy theorists, you'll never believe that anyway. So let's go back to the He-Man Woman Haters Club of the Little Rascals. So picture in the United States, you had the He-Man Woman's Haters Club, and picture all of those boys who were doing those funny things in the show, now growing into adults and thinking, we had so much fun in that club, I think we should get together. And they get together in, I don't know, Philadelphia. Then further south, say Atlanta, you had people who were in that colony, and they said, hey, we had so much fun as a kid in our little clubhouse, let's create a Masonic order, let's create another club. And so you join the club, you do the rituals, just like you did in the Little Rascals. Well, those two clubs are quite disconnected. Now, they can say that they're Freemasons, they can say that they do the rituals of the Freemasons. They may even have in their club some person who is a Mason, who's teaching them how to do the rituals, or they have a book, or they have something. But those two clubs are quite disconnected. Now, picture also in these clubs, remember, they do good things too. Say in the South, there is this need for, I don't know, helping the poor. And so the club says, hey, brothers of the club, we want to help the people of the poor in this city because there are people starving in Atlanta. And we want to create a food drive. And so these people gather together. They start organizing. They start, I don't know, taking donations, and they help the poor. Do they have an agenda? Yes, it's to help the poor. Do they have other agendas? Well, it depends on who's leading it. So there, it's not as black and white as the conspiracy theorists would like you to believe. People who join into this mission to feed the poor have no agenda at all. They just want to help the poor. Somebody who's leading it may have an agenda, but not all of these groups had an agenda. So you may have somebody in one group who has an agenda, somebody in another group who does not. And then say in Philadelphia, in the first group, there's a lot of people in need of hospital care. So like the Order of St. John, the Masonic Order there starts helping people in hospital beds, etc. Well, those two agendas are quite different. One is helping to the poor, one is helping the sick. And do they have an overall hidden agenda? Maybe. It's hard to say, but the point I'm trying to make is each group develops independently. There is no central hierarchy or order. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why the Freemasonry groups have been the target of such conspiracy theories. Because, say, for example, the Atlanta group was led by somebody who had some evil master plan, and they decided that in helping the poor, they're going to, I don't know, teach the poor to do something that's dastardly. Well, that person does have an agenda. Yes, this is very bad. And if you're writing history only based on that group, then you say, yes, Freemasonry is bad. That group was bad. The other group in Philadelphia has no idea that this is going on. So at the rank and file level, if you're looking at the hierarchies that go up, rank and file members have no idea. Leadership may have an idea, but they may actually keep it secret from other leadership. So the leaders in Philadelphia group may not know what's happening in Atlanta group. Now think of the broader scale. Think of these He-Man Woman Haters clubs all over the world. You've got, I don't know how many, tens, hundreds of thousands of these things. And at some point, they did have to create some structure of organization. So there are people who are aware of many of the groups. They're not aware of what's going on in each of the groups. But say they get news that, oh my gosh, this group in Atlanta has gone rogue. And they're doing all kinds of things that they shouldn't be doing. Well, to the leadership who is now made aware, that leadership may want to keep it secret because they don't want other people to know that we've got somebody down in Atlanta who's just doing bad things. And now you have people in the upper tiers who are aware that there are bad things going on and they're not transparent. And you have these people in Atlanta who are doing these dastardly things. Philadelphia may have no idea what's going on. Broaden that to the world, somebody in the UK may not know what's happening in Atlanta. Somebody in, I don't know, Paris, France may be aware, but only the leadership is aware. None of the rank and file members are aware. So from a complex global scale, this is a lot of different disparate groups, some of which may be doing bad things, some of which may not. At the time, Napoleon is taking over and he's not even, if I remember correctly, he had not yet started to conquer the world. Who knows? But at the point of time in which he appointed his brother as a Grand Master, somebody in the UK, I don't know, London, may not have been aware that that was even happening. Even though they're in the French occupation of Malta, the Knights of Malta, if that group was as broad as I think I remember it being, there were different people who were in different leadership positions who were fully unaware that this thing was going on until suddenly it became widely known. And that's why you see good people, bad people, people of no relevance to an agenda whatsoever. Mozart was a Freemason.
whenever you think Freemasonry and New World Order and strategies and conquering the world, Napoleon fits. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart does not fit. So there's many different levels of complexity. And whenever you're thinking through, is Freemasonry trying to establish a new world order? Are they trying to take over the world? You have to put all of that into perspective, because all of that will come into play. However, as it relates to the New Apostolic Reformation, we have to dive just a little bit deeper, because there are some insidious things that are happening.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
So I mentioned in the beginning of this that I wanted to target different groups of people with different thoughts on Freemasonry. The first one we talked about were people who are buying into the conspiracy theories and kind of explaining why they do. The next I want to talk about people who don't really buy into the conspiracy theories, but they see it as a threat to religion. And that is a, you know, considering the rituals that exist in Freemasonry, in the lodges, and considering the fact that the lodges aren't focused on Christianity, people see that, especially leadership in different Protestant groups and Catholic groups, they see it as a threat. And I want to talk about that a bit, because to go there, from the surface, that sounds plausible, but if you go all the way out to its full extent of the threat that exists, you must also buy into some of the propaganda, and some of the propaganda just simply isn't true. The biggest of which, and I'm sure by now if you've been following, watching this live, you've seen people who've already commented this. Albert Pike was a Freemason, and he worshipped Lucifer. I never forget whenever I found this. This was the smoking gun for me. And I believe it's his book, Morals and Dogma, that he talks about this. He says something to the effect, Lucifer, the great light bearer, strange and mysterious name, give to the spirit of darkness, Lucifer, the son of the morning, he who bears the light. It sounds an awful lot like he's worshiping Lucifer. And with good reason, because the name Lucifer is tied to Satan, and if you have escaped a cult, oh my gosh, this is worshiping Satan. All Masons must be satanic. That is the chain of thoughts that I went down. Ironically, it wasn't until I began to study text criticism and understand the different families of Bibles and how those family of Bibles came to be, while studying ancient religion, that I began to understand that no, that's not quite correct. Yes, he does talk about Lucifer, the light bearer, the strange and mysterious name that's used in this passage. But what this actually means, Lucifer is just simply Latin for light bearer. It means something who is bearing light. And I remember growing up with these songs, Jesus, the light of the world. That is essentially what is being said here. Lucifer means light bearer, and Jesus, the light of the world. If we were to say it in Latin, we would say Jesus, Lucifer, which sounds really weird, but that's the way it was. In Roman literature, Lucifer referred to the morning star or Venus, and there are passages where Lucifer, I think it's Isaiah, Lucifer is used to poetically mock the king of Babylon, not Satan, the king of Babylon. And there are other passages, I can't remember exactly, off the top of my head at this moment. I could look it up, but there are passages, or at least one passage, that uses Lucifer in a good way, but it just simply means the light bearer, the morning star. To an ancient religion that is worshiping the morning star, this is very bad. To the ancient Israelites, thinking that God is the light of this world, in Latin, that would not have been so bad. They just simply would have known that Lucifer in that sentence was actually talking about something good, not bad. So to understand the context of what is being said by Albert Pike, it's not really that bad. It is using the Latin language, but it's not meaning what people are saying that it simply means. So Freemasonry gets accused of Luciferianism, which is interesting. There is another reason for this, and this is called, I think I'm saying this correctly, the Taxil hoax. Somebody with the name of Taxil, Leo, I think it was, published these sensational stories that were claiming to expose the satanic Luciferian inner circles of the inner orders within Freemasonry. And it became quite popular, much like the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And he later publicly admitted that it was a hoax. The problem is, by the time he admitted it, all of that information had spread. So when you consider people had been influenced by the hoax, and then suddenly they read Albert Pike, oh my gosh, this must be Luciferian worship, he's worshiping Satan, etc., etc. And that is quite bad. So that's a hoax. That should be completely made separate from the argument of Freemasonry, where it does bear some legitimacy. If you're in the crowd that is not conspiracy theorist, but you're against it, where it does bear some legitimacy is this. So think about the He-Man Woman Haters Club. It was groundbreaking for its time. There were both white and black boys within the He-Man Woman Haters Club in a time whenever black people were being strongly oppressed and condemned. Bring that into today's world. In today's world, there's less of that, but there is a lot of religious discrimination. So picture the He-Man Woman Haters Club of the adults, and we say, we're open to everyone. We're doing this good thing. Take it back to, I don't know, the Philadelphia group I mentioned earlier. We're helping people who need hospitals, who need sick care. We don't care who you are, what you believe. Our agenda is not to push any sort of religion. We're wanting to gather together for a common goal in our clubhouse to help people. The more people we can get to help other people, the better it is. And they say, okay, I don't care if you're Christian, I don't care if you're Buddhist, Muslim, Catholic, Protestant, whatever you are, you can join our group and we're going to help other people. That's basically the premise of something that is working towards good, not working towards evil. How do you do this? I've been in actual meetings with people of different various religions or not religions, and called on by I believe it was a Muslim who was the CEO, asked me, a Christian, knowing that I'm a Christian, to pray for the meal. Think about how how difficult this is. I'm standing next to a guy next to me is a Hindu. I know he's a Hindu. And the guy on the other side is a Buddhist. I have seen the statue of Buddha on his desk. The CEO is a Muslim. There is another Christian in the room. There's this big, broad mix of everything. And he asked me to pray. How do you do this? Well, if you are hardcore evangelical, fundamentalist mindset like I was at the time, the first thought that comes in your head is, I'm going to pray Jesus into this entire group of people, and they're going to, by golly, get Jesus, I don't care what. And in doing so, you can start a holy war. So what you do is you try to pray to God, and you just use the word God, and bless the food, thank God for the food. And it doesn't matter what group you're in or not in, if you understand the concept that God provides for us, the people who are praying with you can pray in their own religion and pray toward their God while I'm praying to the Christian God. So that's what I did. In a Masonic lodge, there is no concept of religion, but they recognize that people should be religious according to, that is like one of the rules. You must believe in some supreme being to be Masonic. We don't care if you're Catholic, Protestant, Buddhist, doesn't matter who you are. You can join our group as a Freemason. You can do good to others, but you must believe in a supreme being. And so whenever they do the rituals, whenever they do the ceremonies, etc., they pray to a supreme being in such a way that it does not offend the different religions, much like I did in a business meeting, a business luncheon that we had. So I'm not opposed to that idea, because I understand that there is a place for such a thing. If it were to be posing itself as a religion, we're teaching people to learn in our supreme being, and we're going to assimilate the world of Christianity to believe in the supreme being instead of Jesus or whatever it is that would be an evil agenda, that might make more sense. But simply believing in a supreme being isn't a bad thing necessarily. Maybe if you are evangelical, it's not a good thing, but it isn't the Lucifer thing that was created as a hoax against the Freemasons. So I mentioned in the beginning of this that I would be tying it from today's New Apostolic Reformation back through its history to show Freemasonry roots. And I know if you're listening this far, it's because you want to hear that. So I have saved the best for last. There is some significant history. However, it isn't as important as people who are of the conspiracy theory mindset want it to be. But in my opinion, it's actually more important, but in a different way. And this is probably the biggest reason why I'm against Freemasonry. And it all goes back to what I said earlier. It's really not so much whether they're a Mason or not, whether they do the rituals or not, even say they are Luciferian, you know, even that, although that would be for a Christian, that's devastating. You have to understand that the lay rank and file members who are in it, many of them remain Christian while they're in it. And so even that seems powerless in my opinion. Even if it were Luciferian and you're there worshiping Jesus Christ can protect you if you believe that God is all powerful. So all of that really, for me, that's all irrelevant. Where it comes back to is the point is it's more about the fraternal order and the transparency than it is the Freemasonry that is causing people to be aghast. So let's break that down a bit. In the history leading to the New Apostolic Reformation, you have both sides. You have people like John Alexander Dowie. One of the key pillars of Pentecostalism was very outspoken against Freemasonry. Charles Fox Parham, who is by many accounts the father of modern Pentecostalism, the projector of the apostolic faith, he was called. Parham, there is some evidence that suggests that he was at least influenced by Freemasonry. He mentions, I can't remember which book, you'd have to go look this up, but there is evidence out there that talks about, I think one of his own writings, talking about a Masonic order of some sort. So there's some evidence out there that suggests that Parham was a Freemason. Whether it's true or not, we'll never know because of the transparency. There's no way to go through the books and see was he Freemason or not. For Parham, Freemasonry was irrelevant. He wanted to be apostolic. So you've got both sides, one who's against it, one who did not talk against it and apparently was part of it. You have William Joseph Seymour, who is basically credited to the Azusa Street Revival, the furthering of Pentecostalism. He, I don't believe, was a Freemason. I don't believe many black people were parts of the lodges during the era in which he was being recognized for the Azusa Street Revival. I think they may have had some black Masonic lodges, but by and large, there weren't as many as the white ones. I'll just say it like that. Now, William Joseph Seymour, he's kind of in the middle of two sides, and there are others who are either in Freemasonry or have strong similarities. And it's the similarities that I want to talk through. Because of this, go back to Dowie. John Alexander Dowie became famous in Australia being strongly outspoken against spiritualism, and has this big series of debates with a spiritualist trying to expose spiritualism. And what does he do? He sees the power of that debate, and he sees the power of interest in the supernatural, the mysterious, and he starts to transform his ministry into that of a Christian spiritualist. And there are some newspaper articles out there that talk that advertise him as Christian mystic or something like this. You can read my book on Dowie and you can find exactly what it says. But the point is this: while being outspoken against it, he adopted principles of it with regards to spiritualism, and then it flourished and developed into this religious thing that is kind of in between both. Is it spiritualism? Is it Christianity? I can't say which, because it's a blending of the two. Well, he did the same thing in being outspoken against the Freemasonries. Does he have Freemasonry rituals? No. Does he have rituals that were uncommon to the Christians? Yes, he does. So he creates his own rituals. Does he have secret, I don't know, handshakes or secret codes to gain these secrets? No, it's not a Freemason, it's not a Masonic order, but he creates loaded language that is very similar. It would be the Christian version of Freemasonry. So what he has created, and he wasn't the only one to do this, what he created had all of the things that Christians abhor with regards to Freemasonry. He is doing them in a different way that slides through the cracks. People just don't recognize what he's doing until they get hooked and assimilated into his religion. Parham, much the same way. I can't say that he went as far as Dowie, but he was doing many of the same things, to the extent that if you study through the Parhamite murders in Zion City, he had people convinced enough of his spiritualism that others who were under him were actually killing people in Zion City in the name of faith healing. They were trying to straighten bones, breaking people. People were dying, etc. And again, Parham is not doing the rituals of Freemasonry, but he's having his own rituals that weren't quite kosher to Christianity. I use the word kosher purposely. So you start to see developing in early Pentecostalism many of the core concepts and constructs that would be appealing to a person who was a Freemason. And I think that was the purpose and intent, at least by Dowie. Dowie saw that if I can take some group of people and the things that they're enjoying and demonize it, and then do something similar, when they come into my group, they're familiar with it, and so it makes them feel at home, and yet they won't find it anywhere in the Christian world. We have something, we have the secret, we have the rites and codes, and if you rise up through the ranks of my religion, you'll gain these secrets. So Dowie, I would say, is very similar to it. Parham, kind of midway. But with regards to Parham and with regards to Frank Sanford, who was one of the other pillars that developed into Pentecostalism, what they had in common was Christian identity. And Christian identity had a different set of rituals and beliefs and weird things that, when you read through it, you just kind of scratch your head thinking, well, that sounds really Masonic. What are they talking about? When you read through Albert Pike or any of the Freemasons talking about the Supreme Being, they often use phrases like the Supreme Builder, talking about the building of the temples, how the different measurements, etc. That's one of the fundamental so-called secrets of Freemasonry, although no longer is a secret. Well, in Christian identity, probably because of Freemasons, the idea became widely accepted that the Pyramid of Giza, the Great Pyramid of Giza, was constructed as a time marker of sorts that could predict futures because of its measurements. In other words, the great architect architected the pyramid, and therefore we can decipher it, we who have the secret knowledge. And then they developed their own loaded language regarding the secret knowledge of this. And I was quite shocked when I found Branham using that loaded language, because he is taking part in the secret ritual of knowing the Great Pyramid structure, which sounds Masonic, and that's actually what drove me into the pathway of studying the Masons. I thought that was a Masonic thing. It wasn't. It was more of a Christian identity thing. As it relates to Rick Joyner and Morningstar, it's that idea of a fraternal order that really becomes problematic. And in many ways, if you really think about it, it is incompatible with Christianity. William Branham had this, and I've got it on the screen if you're watching the video version of this, but he had this doctrine called the stature of a perfect man. And what it was essentially, if you understand the concept, it was the idea that there was a hierarchy, that a pyramid of sorts, that was being created where a person could become a little more holy over time, and you could rise through the ranks, and at the top of it was Jesus, who is the most holy. It was directly tied to the manifested sons of God doctrine. And he started with Paul, who he said was the early church age messenger, he claimed. And he had this other drawing where he would show there's a little bit of light and then a lesser light and then a greater light. And there's a period of time in the Dark Ages where there was no light. And what he was essentially saying, if you understand Freemasonry, was that Lucifer, the light bearer, was going dark. And then in the end time, there would be almost no light. And then Jesus would come. Well, what he was saying is that essentially there's this pecking order, and the Holy Spirit has different levels and tiers in which you can develop the Holy Spirit. And he would say things like the gospel in the days of Luther would not work in the gospel of days of Wesley, which is really absurd if you understand what the gospel is, which I don't believe that he did. And he would say things like, there are people who were born at the end of their age, say the age of Luther, who went into the Wesleyan age, and they had a different doctrine. They actually came in under Luther. So during the Wesleyan age, then they could be saved by the message of Luther, not the message of Wesley. Really, really absurd things, right? But what he's essentially doing is he's taking the idea of a fraternal order pyramid, hierarchical pyramid of perfect man, and saying that there is a level of these things that you can build up to. And of course, he put himself as the so-called Elijah at the top, right under Jesus. So in this pecking order, and there's different versions of this if you read through his sermons, it is establishing much what the Freemasons would call as some sort of a hierarchical pyramid that you can go through the different levels and finally get to Jesus. It is quite different if you understand the Freemasonry and how you can go through rituals and get there. He was doing it through time, but essentially it's the same thing. We prided ourselves as being part of the Laodicean age, the last one before Jesus comes, because we had all of the knowledge of the prior ages. In other words, we were the 33rd degree Branhamites, if you look at it like this, where it becomes really, really problematic whenever you think about it. If you look at what is happening in the New Apostolic Reformation, they have many of these same structures in different ways. Except for if you go to Morningstar, look through their history, and you find Chris Reed, who has Branham's diagram, an exact replica of Branham's diagram, on the wall behind him as he's preaching about Branham's stature of a perfect man. So he is reintroducing this type of hierarchical system to the people of Morningstar. Where this becomes really interesting is the fact that if you understand the gospel, if you're in that middle crowd that I talked about, the ones that aren't the conspiracy theorists outside looking in, or even the left crowd, maybe you're a Christian and you just see this whole thing as absurd. Well, think of how more absurd it gets. Branham is teaching this Masonic type doctrine, and he's doing things like saying the Great Pyramid of Giza was a Bible written by the ancients. He's saying things that are very, very Masonic. And if you look through his history, which I have done on my website, in his historical background leading up to him becoming the leader of the post-World War II healing revival, he was deeply influenced by people who were known and advertised as Masons. There were people who were in his church who were early founders of the Branham Tabernacle, what would become the Branham Tabernacle, who were advertised in the newspapers as Freemasons or being of some type of fraternal order. Another order was the Independent Order of the Odd Fellows, which I thought mistakenly was a Masonic order because of their rituals and because of their structure. But like the Knights of Malta, it's just a different fraternal order. They all seem to share these same attributes. Go back even further, he was ordained by the second in command of the Klan. Well, the Klan itself was a fraternal order, and it was basically created in the same hierarchical structures that the Masons were, and many people who were in the Klan in leadership were also Masons, I think even including Davis. So Branham is mentored by a person who is a Mason, who is a starter of multiple white supremacy groups that are created as fraternal orders. He is his church is being led by people who are either Masons or other fraternal orders. And then he openly admits that he is beholden to both the Klan and the Masons in various ways. You can go through his life stories and you can understand this, but he has no problem really against Freemasonry or the Klan. In fact, supports them. Many members of his church were Klan members. His sister Dolores was a member of the Eastern Star, which their symbol is a pentagram slightly tilted. And if you want to think Luciferian, this is talking about the light bearer, the Eastern Star. That order was established for the Luciferian purpose. And above the door of the tabernacle, during its early years, there are some photographs that still exist with this. The pentagram, tilted just like the Eastern Star, is above the door. So, and he even mentions this in his early years as before the planting of the Branham Tabernacle. He says, we were holding our meetings in the Masonic Hall. So he's openly declaring these things. He is deeply influenced by, affected by, led by, trained by, mentored by, and ordained by people who were involved with fraternal orders. And to the extent he had no problem putting the Luciferian pentagram above the door. And I'm using Luciferian much like you would in the Latin. It's talking about the Eastern Star, the light bearer. So if you understand all of this, you begin to understand why he would think it's okay to create a religion that is shaped like a fraternal order. And you have this. We had our secret language that only we understood, and that's how we would recognize a message member from a non-message member. We didn't have a secret handshake like a Mason did, but we had our own loaded language, and so therefore we had our set of secrets. We also, if you came in as a rank-and-file member into the cult, whenever we would recruit somebody, we wouldn't openly tell them all of our secrets. You had to join, you had to become a part of this, and as you rose up through the tiers of knowledge to become a stature of a perfect man, it was only when you reached the top that we would tell you the secret most things of our cult. That's much like a fraternal order. If you want to compare Luciferian to the Klan, or to the message, to the NAR, that's the thread that binds them all together. It's very, very similar in nature. And that's why I'm set out at the beginning. I'm against Freemasonry for that reason, but I don't think it is as evil and unholy as the conspiracy theorist, because I understand how all of this works. If you try to take the Masonic framework, the ideology that is being created, and take away all of the good that it does. We did not have a hospital order, for example, in the message. In fact, we often would turn away somebody who wasn't in the message, who was in need. We had our exclusivity, whereas the Freemasonry, they do have exclusivity, but anybody can join, and we're not going to, if you leave, we're not going to cut you off forever. That's That's not how a Mason works. We did. So in many ways, if you join the Branham cult or many of the other New Apostolic Reformation cults, it is so far worse than the Masons. And it's that way because it is trying to implement the structure, order, secrets, dogmas, the hierarchy, the ways in which you can be assimilated through different levels and tiers. We had all of that. We were basically Masonic, but in the name of Christianity. And if you think of it like that, if you're in the conspiracy theory crowd, if you're in the middle crowd who is just somewhat religious, not conspiracy theory, or even outside looking in, that alone you have to say, well, this is purely evil. So I would say if you try to take these things and adopt them into Christianity and call it Christianity, in other words, if you say, I want to take Freemasonry, all of the things that I like about Freemasonry, and I want to reshape Christianity to become this, then you can say, yes, this is purely evil. And the irony is, if you go back to William Branham's Stature of the Perfect Man, or, you know, what Chris Reed was showing on the back of his wall, at the top of it is love. And if you understand how this Masonic Christianity thing works, when you rise through those ranks, by the point at which you are at the top of the tiers, you have all of the inner secrets of the cult. Suddenly, you do have love, but only for those within your group. And so whenever people leave, you show them the exact opposite of love. So in fact, there's another conspiracy theory. Whenever you're thinking through the pentagram, it's the pyramid turned down. Whenever you have the point of the star turned down, and they say that's Luciferian. Well, you can truly say that if you join one of these groups and your idea of love is to only love those who are part of your cult, and those who leave, those who won't accept your cult, you're going to show them hatred instead of love, I can say that that is Luciferian. So in the end, I'm totally against Freemasonry because of the fact that I like transparency. And I am fully against the idea that you can take Freemasonry structures and concepts and turn them into Christianity, call it Christianity, because when you combine Freemasonry with Christianity and try to make a secret society of Christians, what you have done is you have created something that is not Christianity. You've created something else, but worse and more insidious, you have branded it as Christianity. So people who were raised in it, when they leave, they think it was Christianity. And when they leave, they'll never come back. Many of them may never come back to Christianity at all because you have destroyed the concept of what is Christian with this merger of fraternal order and Christianity. So hopefully I've done this justice. I could do 100 podcasts and just skim the surface of all of the information that is out there. And the sad part about it is, if you're wanting to research it yourself, it's really hard because there are a lot of conspiracy theories and you have to wade through all of the faults, and it angers me. You wade through the faults by respected religious leaders, Christian leaders, who do not want you to be out of their control. And I'm not talking about just the cults or the NAR. I believe even one of them was John MacArthur. And I hate to step on any toes, but if you're in the MacArthur cult, it's no different than some of the New Apostolic Reformation cults. It just has its ways in which their fraternal order is a bit different. I'll say it like that, and I'll try to be nice and kind. But anyway, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, or to check out the information that we have about Freemasonry, which there's a little bit on the website, not much, you can check us out on the web at william-branham.org. And for more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.